Hello and welcome to Scottish Independence Podcasts. Well, the big Believe in Scotland march is tomorrow. We last covered Gordon McIntyre Kemp and Marlene Halliday chatting about the plans for the event a couple of weeks ago, but now we can get an update. They were on the TNT show last night. Here's the audio version of that discussion.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the TNT show. I'm John Drummond. Tonight we'll be talking to two special guests, Marlene Halliday from Pensioners for Indy and Gordon Kemp from Believe in Scotland. They are joining us tonight to talk about a range of topics, including, very importantly, the march and rally set for Saturday in Glasgow. Thanks for joining us. How are you? First, Marlene.
Oh, well, very good to be here, John, and thanks very much for asking me along with Gordon. Gordon and I have been spending a fair bit of time in each other's company, well, online at any rate, for the past few months, sort of helping get ready for this march on Saturday. So, yeah, that's, I must admit, that's uppermost in my mind at the moment.
Gordon, tell us a bit about the march on Saturday, please.
So, yeah, we've got our second march. Believe in Scotland organised its first march in Edinburgh. And rally in Edinburgh in September. We had a great day. People told us it was, you know, the feeling was like family friendly, getting the Independence family back together, felt like 2014 and all over again. And that's kind of what we're aiming for. We have a great range of speakers and entertainment. We've got lots of bands, lots of stands, lots of blocks within the march itself, and we're walking from Kelvin Way out near Glasgow University to George Square, and it's all going to be happening at George Square.
Terrific. And is that where the speakers will be speaking at?
Yeah, the rally will be at George Square itself. People are asked to meet at 11:30 at Kelvin Way. We're going to have some entertainment there from Shibooms, which is an all-female drumming band. And then Sore Alba Pipes and Drums are going to lead us off, and we'll get to George Square, who knows, about 2 o'clock probably.
Maybe something to add in about, you know, going to George Square, because it's Believe in Scotland linking up with Pensioners for Independence. And well, we wanted the march to be not so long that it would put older voters and members of Pensioners for Indy off. But we also wanted the rally to be somewhere that was really accessible for public transport, and folk can't or just don't want to actually go in the march, they can head straight into George Square and get ready to join in the rally there. So I think it's a good, really good route all round.
And I gather, Gordon, you've also got billboards.
We've got some billboards up as part of this is part of a big indie weekend. We're doing the march and rally on the Saturday, and then on the Saturday night, to thank all the volunteers, we've got hundreds of volunteers that help put events like this together. We're doing a after party. Iona Fife will be performing at that at the committee rooms just off George Square. And then on the Sunday, we're working with all the Yes groups in Glasgow to do a mass leaflet drop from 10:30 in the morning on Sunday, starting at Langside Halls, and there'll be a few stalls and stands there as well on the Sunday, and we're hoping to get out thousands and thousands of leaflets across the south side. So it's all part of a big indie weekend. So for the 2 or 3 weeks leading up to it, or the 2 weeks leading up to it and the 1 week afterwards, we're running a billboard campaign throughout Glasgow, two different designs, switching around different electronic billboards, but we've got permanent ones. If people have been driving along the Clyde Expressway, they'll see our billboards on the Clyde Expressway as well. And the first day they went up, I actually was driving on the Clyde Expressway, and I looked in my mirror and I saw our Independence is Normal billboard, and I just went, oh, that's cool. Oh, wait a minute, that's mine. So it was really good. So, yeah, that's one of the ones in the, I think that's one's south side, is it? I can't remember where that is. But I haven't been to all the locations myself yet.
I remember them from the last time you had the billboards campaign up, and I was driving along the expressway a few times. It was fantastic. Suddenly, yeah. They appear in front of you in a big screen. And well, maybe if you're driving and you're in a traffic jam in the morning, it's not so good. But they do have time to really take in what's on the billboards.
We'll get some professional photographs taken by the billboard company. I've seen the ones in the expressway. I haven't seen the rest of them, but they look really good. And the message really is just let's Unleash Scotland's Full Potential, and Independence is Normal. And the Independence is Normal ones, the Anderson Crane and the Wonky Bridge, and, you know, it's just a very much a Independence is Normal Glasgow, which is quite appropriate for a Yes City. But when we do events across the country, we'll be putting them out in these and other designs. We've got about six designs for billboards. We'll be doing paper billboards as well, working with local groups to put those up. And then as we do events throughout the country, we'll be putting billboards up in different towns and cities across Scotland. So this is the beginning of a national rolling campaign of billboards. And we've got other plans as well, but we're not going to announce all of that right now.
Oh, don't do that. Don't give too much away. But if you can give us a taster or two, that would be greatly appreciated. Here's a description of who's going to be there in terms of speakers and in terms of entertainment, including the First Minister. So you've got everything to gain by going along and absolutely nothing to lose, because I have on good authority that Marlin, through specific connections she refuses to divulge, is arranged for the weather to be clement on Saturday.
It's looking good.
I'll just quickly say it's not any supernatural kind of influence that I've got. It's just me watching the weather forecast.
We've got Richie Venton, the trade union organiser of the Scottish Socialist Party, Gordon Martin, the national organiser for the RMT union, Iona Soper of Scottish C&D in Secure Scotland, who's an anti-capitalist campaigner. We've got Ross Greer, MSP of the Greens, who will be leading the Greens independence push. Jane McAllister, who made that fantastic movie To See Ourselves.
Oh, yes.
Which is really inspiring. And again, that's all about the 2014 sort of Yes family feel. We've got one of Scotland's leading writers, James Robertson, who will be giving us a wee talk and also performing one of his short stories, reading one of his short stories.
Oh.
And he wrote And the Land Lay Still, which is one of the great Scottish novels of modern literary history. We've got someone called Marlene Halliday. I don't know who she is. She's from... Marlene's on there from Pensioners for Independence. And myself, Pat Kane. Obviously, for people my age, the musician Pat Kane, for other people, just the columnist, I don't know, for the youngsters, and the First Minister as well. It's going to be hosted by Iona Fife and the supermodel and author and broadcaster Eunice Olamide. So it's going to be, we hope, a really strong show for people to see, and a huge cross-section of the independence movement that people are definitely going to want to actually hear from. Believe in Scotland is the support mechanism for the grassroots indie movement. We've got 142 Yes groups. And so we've also got Mary McCabe, who's from Pensioners for Indie, who is just one of these hero hard workers who gets out twice a week at Pensioners for Indie stalls in Buchanan Street. And that's what this is all about. It's about getting the indie movement together. It's about getting them rallied up, not a protest, but a celebration of just how good an independent Scotland can be. And I've got a whole list of people, which I won't bore you with right now, but I'll tell you later, possibly if we get a chance, all the different blocks and all the different stalls. It really is a great cross-section of the indie movement.
You're right. I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I really enjoyed the march in Edinburgh last year, went over for that. But just to pick up a bit on what you said about Mary, because when it comes to campaigning, she's kind of like pure dead brilliant. I mean, certainly the Glasgow Pensioners for Indie group wouldn't be as good as it is right now if it wasn't for Mary McCabe. And to a certain extent, that's true of her effect on all the Pensioners for Indie groups over Scotland. She's often been the person who's just being prepared to put in a bit more energy, a bit more of a nudge to get people there, and also kept people's spirits up at times when, you know, we got a bit frustrated or fed up with what was happening elsewhere, usually in Westminster. So yeah, so it's she's definitely a star.
Marlin, a quick question from Mike Fenwick is asking: is the current state pension system fit for purpose, and if not, how would you change it?
Across the UK, it isn't in terms of the amount. The amount is £220 a week for the state pension if you get the full amount for it. But I think the thing that most people don't even know is that if you're 70, 71 and older, you don't actually get that £220 a week. You get £50 less than that. Because when they put it up to the new state pension, it was only for people coming into the system. It didn't apply to, yeah. I mean, I'm one of them, those of us who were still in it. So it's actually £170. And I think that there's something that could be done just to focus on that particular, well, I'm saying that particular group of pensioners, actually it's a majority of pensioners, but maybe those pensioners who are on still on that lower rate and who depend on it. I think that's where something really, really could be done. And I have a wee suggestion, which I'm going to say on Saturday, but I'm going to keep it till Saturday.
Well, you can trail it a little bit, so that a little teaser, a little bit of a taster, Marlon.
Okay, a wee
teaser. Encourage people to come along and listen to you on Saturday.
Okay, a wee teaser. So you'll have heard about the Scottish Child Payment.
Mm-hmm.
It's aimed at low-income families with kids, you know, well, yeah, less under 16-year-olds. It's now up to £25 a week per child. Now, it's described worldwide as an absolute game changer when it comes to addressing inequalities. And if you just listen to what the parents say who get that, you know, they come out with their lives are so much less stressful. The whole family benefits, and the stress isn't there so much because they know they've got that extra cash coming in every week. Yeah. So I think, you see, with a bit of creative thinking in there, there's maybe room for doing something similar for pensioners who are of that age, over 70, 71, and only getting £170 a week. And I know there are benefits, yeah, and people can apply for other benefits, but,
yeah,
the kind of foundation amount, £170, maybe we could do something to top that up in the same way that we have for child payment.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. If there was money in the budget, it'd be a smart thing to do.
But I'm going to float the idea as well, so it'd be interesting to see what
It's a great idea, and maybe as you probably plan to do, is to couple it to independence and say, well, of course there are budget constraints, but these constraints might not be quite so taxing, if you excuse the pun, in an independent Scotland, perhaps.
Could be a first step that just, gives an indication. Yeah. If it could actually happen, it would be brilliant, but it would also give an indication to people about what could come after that.
Well, it's also an argument for independence. If you can say, look, this would be a practical proposition to come independent. Another question for you, if I may. Somebody's asking, what does Marlon think will persuade older voters to switch to yes?
Yeah.
Especially those who are no in 2014.
Yes, if only Marlon knew the answer to that. I mean,
well, my job is to ask the questions.
Yes, exactly. Obviously, the questions are rolling in. I mean, when you looked at the polling that was done, there was polling done very soon after the 2014 referendum, and it did kind of come up with the main reasons why people voted both yes and why they voted no.
Yeah.
And actually, there was a great deal of overlap between all the age groups.
Yeah.
But there were some, and interestingly, there were some people voted yes because they were concerned. They had concerns about the National Health Service. But yeah, then other people voted no because they had concerns about the National Health Service. So it's kind of hard to pick your way through those and come up with a definitive answer. I mean, there probably isn't a definitive answer. But I think for older people, maybe it was just like a step too far into the unknown.
Yeah.
I think it would be different with a second referendum or however we follow to get to independence. I think it's a bit different now, but I mean, I was coming back from Glasgow Green. I'd been at one of the big marches, one of the early All Under One Banner marches. I got on the bus, sitting next to, I was going to say an elderly lady, well, she was more elderly than I am. And she said, the bus is very full. And I went, yeah, there's a big thing on in Glasgow Green. It's about, about Scotland being independence. And she kind of went, oh. And she said, oh, have you just been at that? And I went, yeah, it was great. And I got chatting to her, and it was obvious that she hadn't voted yes. And I said, what made you not? And something she said, well, my sons have both been in the army, and It's the British Army, isn't it? And we've always looked after one another. And I don't know if it's a good idea to break up, you know, the country like that. But the other thing she said was, I just don't know. It's just a very big thing to do. And to be honest, she said, I was just too scared. So, you know, maybe there's just, that's the emotional side of things that we have to address. And I suspect that probably the main bit of work to do is to engage with people's emotions that they have around about it, maybe more than it is about giving information. There's plenty of information, but people need to be reassured emotionally.
You may be interested, in the last two shows we've been talking to young people, and that's one of the points that they made, was that the way the information is conveyed, as far as they're concerned, is poor. And the other point they made was a vast majority of that constituency who didn't vote because they weren't old enough, 2014, are already convinced that independence is a good idea. So it's not like you have to go out there and say to people, do you think, convince them it's a good idea. They're already convinced. The difficulty will be persuading these folks to actually cast a vote as and when the time comes. But what was interesting too, they made roughly the same point. They said it's useful to get information to people that addresses their concerns specifically, and also the fact that for young people, it's very much an emotional commitment, which is fascinating because you're talking about an emotional decommitment. They're talking about an emotional commitment, and it's interesting how often that crops up in our discussions over the 163 odd shows that we've done, how people are motivated not solely but primarily by emotional factors rather than so-called intellectual or other factors. It plays a huge part, it seems, in people's decision-making processes, which is interesting.
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, it's been something that I have to admit myself, I like the information. I want to go and get the information, and I'll use that a lot in making my mind up. But if I'm honest, I was always going to vote yes for Scotland being independent. And I did go and convince myself about the economic case for it. But it was a much more of a heart thing than to do with statistics. And I'm sure that's the same for a lot of people. But then you still have to know how to communicate about that emotional side quite intelligently, don't you? Because otherwise, well, you know, it's like with emotions, you can end up with a bit of a rammy.
Yeah. But it seems to me, Gordon, that's one of the points that that you're addressing in the march and the rally and the after party, is to talk less about sort of raw politics and more about a commitment to a better state, a better country, if you like.
Yeah. And that kind of ties into what Marlene was just saying about pensioners. The UK government calls it the old state pension and the new state pension. So people think that the new state pension has replaced the old state pension, but they've just taken the mick with those terminologies. You have to have retired, I think, Marlene, correct me if I'm wrong, is it the 1st of April 2019 that you have to have retired after that to get the new state pension?
It's about that, yeah. I know it the other way around. You've got to have been born on 1953 or earlier. So it's about, that's about right, yes.
Mine's easier for someone like me who can't think in his feet. So give me a calculator. Yeah. So yeah. So that would be the first of April 2019. Yeah, for that financial year. And 82% of Scottish pensioners don't get the higher pension. Don't get the new pension. So it's really a con. We did some work where we figured out that you actually need £241.50 just to live with dignity as a minimum amount. So getting £169.20 isn't it. If you have no other income, you can make a claim, which is means tested, and get to 218. You're still going into debt. So you can't put your heater on when you're cold. You can't buy that new coat in the wintertime. You know, you can't necessarily feed yourself properly if you're reliant on the state pension. So that is a huge issue. And if you look at Denmark, Norway, Ireland, and Finland, take their pensions, on average, they're £112 a week better off than our pensioners, which is just unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. Small independent countries, I wonder how they manage to do it, because they make decisions for the sake of their people, not for a big mega city hundreds of miles away. But the thing is that in terms of, you were asking about, you know, how we create a better country, yeah. We've done a poll, and this kind of will answer the question that Marlene was talking about before. We did a poll, 2,000 people, And we said, if the Scottish Government put a well-being approach at the heart of its economic plans for independence, that's a plan that recognised that quality of life, equality, fairness, sustainability, happiness and health are all outcomes that should be given equal weight to GDP in economic planning, and that you offered the well-being pension and brought pensioners up to just a basic level of dignity. Well, overall, yes increases 12% versus the same people being asked the yes, no question 2 minutes beforehand, right? And 12% rise in 16 to 34s, a 13% rise in 34 to 54-year-olds, and 55 plus goes up 10%. Mm. And that takes independence to exactly 60% from 48.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is it takes English-born respondents, who we had a heck of a lot of, to 54% yes.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, so there is a way through. It's about how do we build a better country? And it's not about policies. It's not about government. It's not about, I mean, the papers that Jamie Hepburn, the independence minister, is putting out, they're important preparatory work for independence. They're important. But no one's going to read them and be convinced to change their mind. So what we've done is last month we launched our Creating Scotland event, and we had about 9 or 10 performers, and we just made it about culture. We had poetry readings, we had readings in Scots, we had great singers, and bands playing, with a young theatre group acting. We sold 150 tickets, and we could have sold it 3 times out, but it was just a test event. And we had a comedy as well. And basically we said, no politics, no politicians. Let's just celebrate being Scottish. And let's just ask ourselves the question, do we want to be an independent nation? Because political arguing just puts people in tribal boxes. But actually, singing together, laughing together, crying together, you know? So let's work together. And it works. So we're going to roll that out across the country. It's called the Creating Scotland event. And it's all about Scottish culture and less about politics. And that's where we want to take our marches and rallies as well. I'd be quite happy to have a march and rally without any politicians at it, you know? And yeah. and say to everyone, right, no protesting at all. And that's what we're not protesting. We're celebrating Scotland's potential on Saturday. But no protesting, no politics. Let's just get some bands on, and let's get some inspirational talks like many of the people we have got on, and tell everybody to bring along an undecided friend, because they're not going to be insulted. They're not going to be put in their political boxes. Heckles aren't going to go up because our politician's there. We'll sing together. We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and go grab a beer and talk about independence and how much better Scotland can be. I think that's how we win our independence. It's about the grassroots, and it's about culture, and it's about friends talking to friends. Let's take it away from the politicians, because they're not delivering, none of them.
We were talking about Mary McCabe earlier, and one of Mary's ideas that she followed through on was, how can we contact, say, the people who live in sheltered housing, or maybe they're in residential care? Mm. And she said, well, we'll make a music troupe. We'll have a choir, and we'll have some instruments, and we'll get together and practice, and we'll create a wee program, and then we'll go and we'll just go and perform, maybe while they're having their lunch or after their lunch. Now, it was quite hard to actually get into those places, because you had to persuade the manager. But we did, and you know, we had I'm not a great singer, but I was singing a little bit, and I got my fiddle out, so I was sometimes accompanying the singers, and it was good fun doing it. And you know, I don't know how effective it was, but we went out probably half a dozen times, and then after we'd performed, of course, you just sit down next to someone and get chatting to them.
Sure.
I mean, I sat down to an old chap, and he said, "Oh, I'm so pleased to see you. You know, there's not very many people in here that are pro indie. I sometimes don't have anyone to talk to." So that kind of approach to people, it's we weren't there hiding that we were pensioners for indie, but we weren't there primarily to talk about that. We were there primarily to, you know, to entertain them and maybe give them a few things to think about. So unfortunately, COVID happened and it all came to an end. But it's maybe something that we should think about doing again.
Sounds like it. We talked about both Gordon and you have talked about getting together or something. But I gather there's nobody from Alba on the program. Is that right, Gordon?
Yes, it is. We did invite Alba. and they had an opportunity with the first organization we invited. We are completely party neutral. We met with our steering group, discussed it, and we discussed it in meetings with our partners for this march and rally, Pensioners for India. And we said, yeah, we're party neutral. Let's invite them. We invited them, and for whatever reasons, they say there are various reasons for it, they waited 61 days to come back to us to say they wanted someone to speak. But we said to them, we're inviting you first. You can speak. However, we said, you know the Greens don't want to share a platform with you. We don't agree with the Greens on that. So we're inviting you first. Give us a quick response, and then we'll say to the Greens, Albert are speaking. But we need you to say that because we want to invite you first. We don't want to invite the Greens, then tell them that you're coming along because we have to uninvite them. We thought that was the reasonable way to handle it. They waited 61 days. I texted them. I had phoned them. Nothing came back. So we said, right, they're not answering us. We're going to move on. We invited the Greens, who we were always wanting to invite anyway because we want to invite everyone. And the minute we announced the Greens, they went, ha-ha, we'll have a speaker. And I just went, no, you won't because you've messed us around. And now they're telling everybody that the Greens have blocked them. The Greens didn't even know. The Greens just said yes when I phoned up, you know, and the SNP said yes when I phoned up. And the Scottish Socialist Party are also speaking at it. And they actually phoned us and said, we want to come along to your march. We're going to have a block. We're going to bring a lot of people. How about giving us a speaker slot? And I went, that sounds great. I actually forgot to ask everybody. I just went, yeah, of course. You know, that's how easy it is to organize this with everybody else. You know, everybody else either contacted us asking for a slot or said yes immediately on the phone. Albert took 61 days. I don't think they wanted to speak.
It's not to get wrapped around in the axle about which politician, which other politician, but rather to focus on the major point, which is this is about people getting together. Mm-hmm. It's about this collective thought, which is implicit behind all of this, which is that, you know, if you're playing together, the chances are you'll end up working together in some way, shape, or form.
Let me just run through a couple of things. So we've got Yes to Indy. So Yes to Indy that do the marching as well. We've agreed to they're marching with us because there was a clash of dates, and we're going to march with them and promote their events later in the year. I've even offered a steward for them. Women for Indy have said they'll be there. Yes for EU. Pensioners for Indy, Yes Bikers are coming, Yes Stones will have a stall, Indy Cafe is coming, Soar Alba Pipes and Drums, the iNotes, Shiboom, and we've got SNP, Greens and Scottish Socialist Party. So basically, this is a hugely diverse cross-section of the independence movement and a lot of cultural figures rather than all just politicians. You know, we're disappointed that Alba aren't there, but it's their choice. It's the way they behaved.
I think it's a real shame that Albert aren't there. I mean, I also think that it's not good that the Greens won't share a platform with them, but there you go, that's exactly it.
Why we said to Albert first, because we don't agree with the Greens. We wouldn't let anyone tell us who can talk at our rallies.
I really don't understand that, because is this prescription that the Greens are exercising, we should ask them to come on and explain it, would that also apply to television debates? In other words, if SNP and Alba represented, the Greens won't turn up. I can't believe that's the case.
Well, it's not the SNP. They'll happily shield a platform.
No. My point is a general one. If the Greens were invited to do a television debate and Alba was one of the representatives, would they refuse to turn up? I can't believe that.
I believe that is the case. Really? I believe that is the case. And you know what? I think it's daft. And I've told them I think it's daft. However, the Greens have MSPs, and because Alba have got a defector from the SNP, Alba have got an MSP as well. And okay, I'm not saying they got on like a house on fire, but they'll have to sit together in committees. So it is daft. I've told the Greens I don't agree with it. If you don't like someone, turn up, debate them and beat them and prove you're right. That's what politics is all about. So that's it. But I wasn't going to uninvite the Greens, having invited them, having given Alba every chance to an open goal to put the Greens in difficulty. But instead, they didn't take it, you know? The thing is, what's the road to independence? How do we get to independence from here? The Westminster government's not going to give us a referendum, right? The Supreme Court's backed or blocked, Holyrood doing its own. So the writing's on the wall. There's only one way to get to independence, and that is for Holyrood 2026 to be a de facto referendum where we say to people that a majority of votes for independent supporting parties, and I think there's going to have to be some alliance on the list at some point, right? If we're going to do that, right? That makes me popular with everyone, doesn't it? And then if there's a majority of votes at Holyrood 26, that's it. We begin negotiations, and if we don't negotiate, we begin separation, right? And that's the only way we're going to get independence. And it is a valid way. If you don't need a referendum to become independent, you don't need Westminster's permission to become independent. Scotland only needs the permission of the Scottish people. And a de facto referendum at next Holyrood would give that, and that would be fine, we think, for the rest of the world to go, yep, you have democratically chosen this route. And to get there, we're going to have to work together in a convention, and the Greens and Albert are going to have to sit together in a convention with us and with everybody else. So as far as I'm concerned, right, there's been a falling out. I think there's been some messing around. They think I did some messing around. Don't care. I can't control what other people do. I can only control what I do myself. And we reached out in good faith. It's not happening. But when it comes to a convention, we all have to get together and we all have to put away all grudges, let all the acquaintance be forgot, and come together to deliver independence. Well, and I think we can. I'm still positive that we can.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that. And Marlon's nodding too. I assume that you're really comfortable with what Gordon's been saying, Marlon.
Yeah, well, yes, and indeed. And you know, how Gordon's described it, you know, as a constitutional convention, as a way of bringing everyone together. I mean, whatever representatives we had of whatever party there, plus, you know, folk from Civic Scotland groups, that was accepted as at the last SNP conference. I think it was Joanna Cherry who actually put forward that proposal. So in a meeting recently, I asked Stephen Flynn, you know, would it not be an idea to start the moves to set up that sort of basis for a convention now, you know, during this year, when we know there's going to be a general election? His response was, I thought it was very pragmatic, actually, and fair enough. He said, there'll be so much happening in that general election campaign that we wouldn't be able to do it properly. And actually, afterwards, I thought, yeah, probably that's right. Mm-hmm. But I think it should be something that gets taken up and put into motion as soon as we possibly can. One reason, because it will take quite a lot of organising. But the other reason that, you know, Gordon's touched on, that it hopefully will be a way of bringing people together and letting those kind of differences and whatever, you know, shenanigans or whatever people think, but disagreements, let those drop away and work together, because that's the only way we're going to get independence.
Yeah, and also let me add a little bit of historical context here. The reality is that every separatist or stroke independence movement that's ever taken place throughout centuries has had very different perspectives. You know, there have been very different views that combine together to decide, yeah, we'll subsume all of our other concerns in order to achieve this goal. And then once the goal has been secured, then we can start going our individual ways. I mean, the American situation is classic. I mean, they got together, they got their independence, and heavens above, even before the ink was dry, they had produced Federalist Papers, Republican Papers, Democrat Papers, you know, and they were all at each other's throats. But, you know, you have to expect this in a mature democracy, that people are going to have strong views and they will want to propose those views and hopefully have those views accepted in the form of laws, etc. There's nothing unusual or untoward about that whatsoever. I mean, it's very healthy, it's very grown up, and there's nothing necessarily negative about dissension. You need a little bit of grit in the oyster to produce a pearl. Maybe we should all take a deep breath and say, this isn't so, A, it's not so terribly unusual historically, and B, there are ways through this in the way that you and Gordon have described.
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, as well as me being part of Pensioners for India, I'm also one of the presenters for a Scottish Independence podcast, and we did a series of podcasts where we talked to people from every independent supporting party about what they thought as the way forward. And of course, this idea about a convention, Scottish constitutional convention, came up a lot, and there was huge enthusiasm for it. And more than one person said, that would be such a good vehicle, you know, if we get it up and running, and then, hey, you know, we could, that group of people could then organise a meeting in Thurso and just invite people to come and say, what do you want? How do you think the best way forward is? Do the same in Stornoway, Edinburgh, whatever. And I hadn't thought of it like that. But myself, but I just thought that's true. That would just be a brilliant vehicle to use. It would have people from different political parties in it, but it would be hopefully be able to put forward the bigger picture.
But it has to be a convention of the people talking to the people. Yeah. We need to go around Scotland and actually say, what are your hopes, dreams, and aspirations for Scotland? And it's interesting, National Collective did that in 2014. And I think we'd like to steal that idea and really ramp it up because, you know, talking to Andrew Barr from National Collective just a couple of weeks ago, he said, look, we asked people what their dreams were about Scotland. Come, you know, if you had a magic wand, what would you change? And he said, people are like, nobody's ever asked us that. It's always been talking about politics. I just love that. It's great. So if we have a national convention, that it has to have the elected politicians of every party that's got somebody elected in it, including councillors, right? So it's going to involve everyone. But they will be there in the political bit. But the rest can be groups that are looking into pensions, groups that are looking into finance, groups that are looking into business, groups that are actually, well, Believe in Scotland will, I would assume, be the campaigning arm because we're, you know, all the 90% of all the active yes groups plus. And so actually go out and run events across Scotland, but not political events, cultural events, like the Creating Scotland events, and get people talking, get people saying, these are my dreams and aspirations for Scotland. Capture that. And then put it into an independence manifesto that isn't a bunch of politics or isn't like Scotland's future, which is unreadable, but is actually a manifesto that is based on the hopes, dreams and aspirations, the better selves that we actually want to be as a country, based on our values, and show it to people and say, right, that is what you have told us to go and get, and we're going to go and make it happen. Are you with us? And if we do that, we will get 60% easy, right? We've got to take it out of the hands of the politicians. I keep saying I'm going to be very popular in my next meeting with a politician. We've got to take it out of the hands of the politicians. And the reason for that is if you look around the world at every successful social construct change, every independence movement, whatever you want to call it, they're not led by politicians. Politicians don't make waves. They ride waves. So the people have got to make the waves. And Estonia, it was the singing revolution. It was choirs that organized the holding hands along the motorway. And, you know, you look at Václav Havel, who was one of the key figures in Czech, well, he was the Czech Republic president. He was one of the key figures in destroying the Iron Curtain. He was a playwright and a poet. Funnily enough, it's always playwrights. It's always singers. It's always actors. It's always poets. It's always folk singers. Yeah, it's almost never a politician. They sometimes become as trade unionists and something in Poland, but yeah, it's almost never a politician. So in Scotland, we're totally addicted to politicians. Politicians have fans in Scotland. If you're a fan of a politician, you need to get a life, you know? these guys, I mean, I wouldn't want their job. I wouldn't want to wake up every day wondering what the papers are saying. And it's a hard life if you're actually doing surgeries on Saturdays and all. If you do the job properly, and especially the guys that are going into London, oh my God, what life do you have? So they're important and the work they're doing is important. Those papers that the Scottish government are putting out are important. But what's missing is a grassroots cultural campaign where we're going out and meeting people and engaging the undecided. And if we add that, and that should be the bulk of it, then we will win. So we get there.
I assume you agree with this, Marlene. You haven't...
I'm just going to get my fiddle out, shall I?
I'm just going to say that. You could have...
I do agree with that. And I saw a tweet on, it was from Yes for EU group. They were out on Saturday in Edinburgh and they'd linked up. So Yes for EU had linked up with some of the Edinburgh Pensioners for Indy, a Yes Marchment group, and there was another couple of groups. And they were just standing on a corner somewhere in Morningside, I think it was. We stall and they're just talking to, they're giving out leaflets and they're standing there talking to people, and that's what does it. That's the way to do it. Have an actual real live conversation with someone. I mean, Twitter, I mean, there's some people on Twitter who could start a fight even if they were only the only person on Twitter. But in any case, it's a bit of a waste of energy to do that. You do need to get out and have real conversations with people. And just to pick up a little bit on the idea that the National Convention or Constitutional Gaelic, whatever we call it, and asking people, what are your dreams? You know, if you could change them, what would you change? That's just brilliant. Because, you know, eventually that's what can go into our Scottish written constitution, our actual proper written constitution once we're independent. We can put down, it's going to contain the values that we want the country to be arranged around and organised around. And I just think that's brilliant, actually. And yeah, especially when, you know, if you can bring people along, I mean, I know that's sort of pretty long term because it would take some years to do that. But if you could bring people along, even at the very beginning, to kind of engage with that and think, oh, yeah, what would I change? That's the way to go. Definitely.
I think also there would be another big advantage in all of this, it seems to me, and that is that, especially from outside Scotland, the impression one gets is there's a terrible lack of self-confidence among Scots. I mean, for example, listening to the two of you will come to as a bit of a shock to many people, because both of you are talk in positive terms. You talk about, there's a challenge, but this is the way you meet the challenge. In other words, you're proposing ways forward. That comes out of self-confidence. Nobody who lacks self-confidence would ever say, oh, I can find a way through this. Here are some ideas, because they don't come from that place. You have to be self-confident. But when I look around and I speak to other people, they say, well, why don't Scots do this, say that, etc.? The impression they have is of a bunch of people who, while they may be concerned, deeply concerned in some cases, don't somehow articulate that in the form that you two do. In other words, you're looking forward. They tend to say things like, well, you really can't change things. That's the way it's always been. And particularly amongst older people, I have to say, that there's that strong sense of, well, you know, it's hard to change things and where's the support for it, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a sense outside of Scotland that there's a lack of self-confidence, I have to say.
I think there is, but it's funny because I've got quite a few friends who say, oh, you're a complete optimist. You always see the upside of things. And somebody puts an obstacle in your way and you go, well, that's the way then. That shows me the way. And, you know, and it's like, they go, you're such an optimist. And I go, I think I'm normal. I think you guys are just, you know, too down on yourselves all the time. And I was brought up in England. So I was brought up in the northeast of England and didn't have the upbringing of my mother and my father, Drummoyne and Maryhill, etc. And my attitude is so different from theirs to life. I mean, you know, they moved as economic, I nearly said economic refugees, but that's not the quite word, is it? And my economic migrants from Scotland. Okay, it was bad, but maybe it wasn't that bad. As a young kid, I was taken down to England. They're so much more confident than us in almost every way. And that is an issue. And there's a thing called the Glasgow effect, where the idea is that poverty and deprivation makes you die younger because you have less of a life to live and less hope, etc. And I buy into that. And that's why I support wellbeing economics as a replacement for the capitalist system that we have now, or the neoliberal capitalist system, because, you know, it's not just capitalism. It's a bastardized type of capitalism that certainly isn't for anybody except oligarchs, etc. That's where we're heading. And so wellbeing economics is about finding balance in society with the economy. And when you put it that way, like you saw with the poll data I gave you before, people go, yeah, that's common sense. Let's do that. Yeah. But for some reason, we've got an economic strategy in the United Kingdom that is so out of step with the values of the Scottish people. I don't know why the economy isn't the biggest reason people would actually want to switch to independence. Because ideas like Marlene's to top up the pension, well, like I say, I'd like to see a European average pension, or at least get, you know, building up towards that after independence. But the issue is, if the Scottish government say, right, we're going to give everybody a chunk of money now, then the UK government will find a way to take more money off them so they can't afford to do it, or try and legally stop them. But so it's a fantastic idea. And if there's any way the Scottish government can afford it, let's do it. But all we're doing is just delaying the inevitable, because Britain is broken and we've got to
I think that's the additional point that I would suggest that you might want to consider, the two of you, at some stage, which is that so often, and I've said this in other shows, it strikes me that the Yes movement, the independence movement in Scotland, is a bit like a one-club golfer. You know, everything is commonly very positive. You know, we'd like you to do this for this reason. But there's never anything negative that says, oh, by the way, the UK is a busted flush. You know, here are the reasons why the UK does not have a long-term future. Sometimes you have to say something negative about the other side. Otherwise, it sounds a bit like sort of terribly, terribly optimistic. And it's not, because most people expect a balanced view. And if you give people a little bit of negativity as well, it makes the cake more eatable, as it were, it seems to me. And there is such an extraordinary story to be told about why the UK, A, is in such a basket case, and why that's not going to be resolved anytime soon. So what it does is it takes away the safety blanket notion that people have, that you described so eloquently, Marlene, about the woman you met in the bus. You know, I don't want to make a mistake here. Well, but if you thought that by staying still, that was a terrible mistake, then you would make the move. Because it's second, if the house is on fire,
I take the point. It's a good one, and it just raises up other questions, isn't it? It's like where do people get their information from, and how do you get what you've just said, that kind of information out there? And you know, I guess that's where, you know, we do have people within the Yes movement who are trying to do that. Yourself, you're obviously a big part of that, John. So, and Independence Live's done such a lot to get that out there. So, I mean, I do see that on social media. The trouble is, I think it you just have to think how to put it in a way that's clear, but not so partisan that it just puts people off. And that takes some skill, I think, knowing how to communicate it. But it's definitely, I think, a job waiting there, you know, to be done. And another thing about, you know, our Scots, you know, lacking in confidence. And I'm a bit older than Gordon, so my dad had just got back, well, not long back from fighting 6 years in the North Africa and Italy when I was born. And you know, as far as he was concerned, he knew what he wanted. He knew where he wanted Great Britain to go, and he had positive ideas about it. They were very left-wing ones. He brought me up to kind of go, well, you'll not be able to do everything, but have a go at it and see where it takes you. So that's just a big advantage if you get that message as a kid. But at the same time, my mum wanted me to go to elocution lessons so that I wouldn't have a Fife accent. And she wasn't snobby. She was just practical. Otherwise, you know, I'd have a lot more of a Fife accent than I don't know how much of one I actually have, actually. So you're always up against that. And I wasn't told anything about Scottish history when I was at school. Loads of stuff. Sometimes I think maybe we should just put on a few events that just kind of help people highlight those parts of Scottish history that folk my age don't know about, like the radical walls of independence in the 1820s and, you know, loads of other stuff that's there. So it's quite a lot of work to be done, isn't there?
It certainly is.
That's part of the culture push.
It's part and parcel of all of that. Now, I'm going to ask you a leading question now. Having highlighted all of the misgivings and concerns about how things could be improved, the Labour Party is saying to people right now, if you want change, vote for us. What's wrong with that?
The issue is that all the polls have told the political parties that the big issue here is getting rid of the Tories. And on a UK scale, getting rid of the Tories means voting Labour. But it sure as hell doesn't mean voting Labour in Scotland. And the SNP have been saying, let's get rid of the Tories. The Tories are gone. In all likelihood, even with a half-decent campaign, the SNP will take the Tories out in every seat in Scotland, right? And they might hold on one if they're very lucky, if they somehow rebound. But yeah, so Labour, in order to take out the Tories down south, and in what used to be the red wall, now called the blue wall, are just saying they will be, and, you know, they will be the continuity government, that they will be Tory, not even Tory light. They're praising Thatcher. They're talking about privatising the NHS just in order to win. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not going to be a single jot better, you know, for Scotland. In fact, I think it would be worse. And if they get seats in Scotland, they'll call that a mandate to stand against Scottish independence. So independence supporters who vote Labour thinking, well, at last I'm going to get on a winning side, are not helping the independence cause, and frankly not helping the future of the Labour Party in an independent Scotland either. But the SNP have got an opportunity of a lifetime, because they've got their troubles. They've got all sorts of troubles. Humza Yousaf, I do believe, is committed to delivering independence, but he's inherited a boat with a few holes under the waterline. It's not going great guns for many reasons that aren't actually his fault. I was, just as many people were, hugely frustrated and didn't have a good relationship with the Nicola Sturgeon government at all. Humza Yousaf and his team are actually saying, let's talk to the independence movement, let's get on board with them, let's hear what they've got to say, which is the exact opposite of Nicola Sturgeon. And so, although they're in a less advantageous position, I do believe that if they get it right on the convention and on their independence messaging in this campaign, there's 51-52% yes support, and there's only about 32-34% SNP. That's it. That's their opportunity. Tell us how you're going to deliver independence, and independence supporters will stop thinking about voting Labour. That's what they have to do.
I agree with that. And for someone my age, so I don't know, I suppose I was about 30, I think, when Mrs. Thatcher came to... When I hear Labour politicians saying what an inspiring leader she was, and, you know, they're going to model themselves on her, whatever, economics, I think it was, I heard one of the Labour people saying, I just go, wow, Labour, you know, it's obvious what you're doing. You're getting the English on board. Fair enough, because they do have to do that. That is where they have to win. But surely Scots watching that on their television sets can go, hey, well, wait a minute, that's not going to suit us, and that's not what we want to vote for. So, yeah, don't vote Labour. You certainly don't need to vote Labour to get rid of the Tories. That was never the case. So.
Labour are going to win by a landslide. I mean, there's no way the Tories can come back from this. Marlon and Gordon, thank you very much for joining us tonight. So to all of you, thanks for joining us. Stay safe. Take care. Thank you. Good night.
So hope you enjoyed that update from Marlene and Gordon. We'll see you all on Saturday, hopefully. I'll be in George Square, probably on the Yes Slates, Yes Stones stall. Marlene, of course, will be on stage. But wherever you find us, do stop and say hello. It's always lovely to chat to people. See you there. Bye now.